speaker is Tanya Leal Mendez, and she will be speaking about the relationship between prediction and proficiency in online L2 processing. Yes?
Okay, we're almost there.
Excellent.
Now you guys can see it, but I can't. This is interesting. Before we start, I should point out, I can see it from here. So, yes, okay. So I should point out that I'm doing this work in collaboration with Rumiana Slovakova, who's a McGill graduate, who's at the University of Southampton, and Thomas Farmer, who's at the University of Iowa. So as you see from the title, what I want to talk about today, it's not my desktop, but the relationship between proficiency and prediction in online L1, specifically L2 comprehension. So comprehending language in real time is a really complex task. We have to do lots of things. And one of them involves incrementally constructing interpretations. I mean that an incremental that we normally don't wait till the end of a sentence to make the judgment about it. So we're pretty good at this, at least in L1. How do we get there? Well, it seems that part of the story is that the system that's responsible for this comprehension uses all sorts of cues. We have a list here, lexically based, verb biases, processy, world knowledge, etc. And increasingly, we get the idea that brains can predict things, especially linguistic things. We have emerging consensus for that. So what am I talking about when I'm talking about prediction? If you have a sentence like this, on a windy afternoon, the child flew A, you could probably guess that the word that's coming is kite. And why do we know this? This is a highly constrained context. We have windy, with child, afternoon, etc. Right? So it would seem that because language comprehension occurs so quickly, over mere hundreds of milliseconds or less, this would help us, right? But prediction has traditionally been considered inefficient and to carry a high cognitive cost because we have so many choices, so we could get things wrong. However, we have the consensus that maybe we can't predict the specific word, but we can predict other things about the incoming words. So if I give you a sentence like this, which is much less constrained, the child saved the, we might have 50 different answers from the audience. But if I give you three, you see commonalities between the answers. So English speakers know that a verb like save is really biased towards having an object. And after, moreover, encountering a determiner, we know that we're going to have a noun, right? Master, count, etc. So again, we might not be able to predict the specific word, but some aspects about the word. So the goal of our study today is to examine the role of prediction in L2 as it relates to proficiency. Our hypothesis is that with increased exposure and knowledge of the cue structure of L2, we're going to get more accurate and stronger predictions, online predictions during online processing. So there's some relatively recent hypotheses, well, we just heard about, well, not specifically the hypothesis, but some of that work, that carve out a special role of processing for L2 learners. So we have the shallow structure hypothesis, for example, which posits that L2ers have less detailed grammatical representations. So the processes that get you to L1 acquisition will not get you to L2, so these look very different. Because they don't have these detailed grammatical representations, L2 looks like shallow parsers. They're not using all the detail that they can use. However, if you pursue a more continuous approach saying, well, you already have these processes that are operant in L1, could it possibly get you to L2? And that's the question that we are empirically addressing today. So let's go really briefly through some of the evidence that we have in favor of prediction. So DeLong, Erbach, and Kudus did this really clever study. They use a manipulation, phonological manipulation of English. So if you have single indefinite articles in English, you can have A or N. And the difference between them is whether or not the word that's following is starting with a vowel or a consonant, right? So they did ERPs. Well, we've heard lots about them. They measured brain activity. And they had them read sentences like this. The day was breezy, so the boy went outside to fly A. And they had two continuations, either a kite or an airplane. Now, we know that kite is a more likely continuation for this sentence. They verified this via an all-flight test. So they didn't focus on the word, on the actual noun. They focused on the determiner. So before they saw the word, when they saw the noun, if they saw an, they were surprised. Why? Because an cannot precede kite in English. And that's exactly what they found. So the higher the word probability, the smaller the n for amplitude at the indefinite determiners. So how do we get there? How do we get to be good predictors in L1, good comprehenders? Well, if we look at the developmental literature, it looks like children become progressively attuned to some of these cues, meaning that there's development. In the beginning, they looked at certain cues that are very reliable, like lexical verb biases, and then eventually, as they mature and get better at their L1, they look at different things like referential context, etc. So even in L1, there's development. Could this be the case in L2? And that's what we're asking. So what are the implications for the story for L2 as we see them? Predictions are generated from multiple cues. They're available in social and linguistic contexts. So as you have more access to this language, as you know the structure, the probabilistic structure of the L2, you should be able to generate stronger and more accurate predictions. So if you look at L2 acquisition, comprehension, processing in this way, we could say that L2 comprehension could be characterized as the experience-driven progressive learning of the L2 cue structure. So how can we test prediction in L2? Well, we're going to use Spanish. We're going to take advantage of a linguistic property in Spanish that's called clitic dislocation. So an unmarked sentence in Spanish, which is out of the blue, should be good. Looks like this. It's just basically subject, verb, object. The sentence means I know my students well. But if something has been previously mentioned in the discourse, meaning it's a topic, we could possibly get a sentence like this. And what happened here is the same exact sentence. It means the same thing. But it means that a mis estudiantes has been previously mentioned. When this happened and this noun phrase has been left dislocated, then something syntactic, purely syntactic, must happen. You have to have a piece of inflectional morphology that follows. It's marked in green there. It's a clitic. So they know this. They can make a prediction. They see the topicalized phrase. They know the clitic must follow at some point. So if, again, the cue that we have here for learners that's going to lead them to predict is that topicalized phrase. What does it predict? That something should happen downstream, syntactic, a clitic. Clitics appear before finite verbs in Romance languages, so we know where to look at. That's where the clitic should appear. So the participants for our study were 36 basically monolingual Spanish speakers that were tested in Mexico, so you know they hear some English here and there. We also had 120 learners. Now, the sentences that I will show you now are very complicated. They all have embedded sentences, so we surmised they needed at least some basic lexical items to participate in the study. 93 made the proficiency cut. It was at 50%. We had our participants engage in a variety of materials. We're only presenting a subset of them. We had a self-paced reading task, which was, of course, online, then an offline rating task with the same structure, and then some proficiency tests, a test of syntactic knowledge of clitics so that we knew that they actually knew where the clitics, you know, go in Romance and Spanish, and some language metrics. So this is what the self-paced reading test looks like. That's a translation. They just see dashes throughout the computer screen. Then as they press spacebar, they get all the sentences. At the end of the sentence, they have a comprehension question. We score these as well, and they answer yes or no. So the specific manipulation that we're using has already been used in L1 processing by Leticia Parros in 2006. This is her dissertation. So basically, participants would see a context that would license a topicalization to make it natural, otherwise sounds weird out of the blue. And then they have the topicalized phrase, a bunch of other material, and these two sentences, our two conditions, are identical. The only difference is that in one, their expectation is met, and they encounter the clitic at the first verb they see. In the second one, their expectation is not met, and the clitic does not appear until the second embedded verb. Now, these two sentences are grammatical. These main verbs are optionally transitive. You could have that clitic or not. But, of course, the first one is more frequent, and she verified that the offline task, many speakers like the first one better. So our rating test is pretty normal. I won't waste a lot of time with it, but it's just 1 through 7, Likert scale. Again, the options were felicitous with a clitic and felicitous without a clitic. If you have any questions, either at the question session or later, I can address them. So I'm going to present you the results of the online test. These are our natives. What you're going to see is that you're going to see the whole sentence graph from the first word to the last, and these are the reaction times. Now, remember that these two conditions, these two sentences are identical. The only difference is at the clitic. So at that first clitic, whatever happens at the main verb, that's what we want to look at. So these are the sentences, both early and late conditions for the native speakers. As you see, the lines are basically on top of each other, except for these two regions, which are exactly after the clitic, when the clitic appears, of course. So this is just, I'm just zooming in. The rest is not interesting because they're overlapping. So look at that. At the main verb, we have a significant distinction. When they didn't get the clitic that we were expecting, they were surprised, and they took longer. The reaction times were slower. And then when they got the clitic, that didn't happen. Now, this has a spillover effect, so the complementizer that's right after is also read slower if their expectation was not met. So this is pretty coherent with the L1 literature. It's nothing too exciting about here. I mean, it just seems to confirm that. What about our advanced learners? Well, we vend our learners using our proficiency test. This is a top 20th percentile. And it looks pretty much like the native speakers. So if we focus in, the only significant differences, again, are after either the clitic appeared or not at that main verb with a spillover effect, again, in the complementizer. If we zoom in that part, that's what we see. When the expectation was not met, it took them longer. Now, what about the intermediates? Well, that's a different, a little different pattern. The lines are on top of each other. There are no significant differences between any of them. So if you look closely at there's a trend, not enough to make it significant. So what does this mean? They didn't predict that clitic coming, whether they got the clitic or not. They just weren't bothered by it at all. This is another way of looking at our results. This is just the region at the main verb when we found that main difference. So as you can see, the natives and the advanced to make a significant difference between the two, not the intermediate. So they're not able to deploy this information online. Now, this are just, you know, we just clustered them into numbers. We use what the literature normally uses for numbers. But we really should look at the data in a more continuous way because it's an artificial distinction whether you're an intermediate or an advanced. So when you look at the data continuously, this is the important part. And here we have plotted proficiency against that main reaction when that was elicited by the expectation of violation. So the difference at the main verb. So as you get more proficient, you're more surprised, you're more bothered by the fact that you didn't see that clitic. So this is a function of knowing about the cue structure of language. You could say that maybe the intermediate didn't notice a topicalized phrase. They didn't know that something should follow. Now here are the results of our rating task. I didn't give you very many details, but it kind of works like the online task. It has the context again, and then you have to rate two sentences, one with the clitic, which is felicitous, and the other one with the clitic, without the clitic, which is not felicitous. And in this case, all three groups, native speakers, advanced, and intermediate, make a significant difference between the two. So offline, they know this. And the test of clitics, they know where the clitics go in context. When they have an audio visual test, they know this. And somehow, they're not able to deploy this online. They're not able to make predictions. At least the intermediates are not. So if we see these two bars, these two graphs side by side, and of course, these are different tasks, the important part is that you see stars offline over the three groups, and not on the first one, not online. The intermediates don't look the same. So metalinguistically, of course, the difference is that all three groups were sensitive to this clitic absence. Online, the natives were sensitive as well. And in the learners, we have a progressive, an emergent sensitivity. The advanced do, the intermediate do not. So we see that with increasing proficiency, non-native RTs are more similar to native speakers in terms of the magnitude of the RTs elicited by the expectation of violations, what they were processing online. And we see that proficiency correlates, and this is nothing new, with amount of exposure, but also to study abroad. That seems, the type of input seems to matter. So if we look here, there's lots of numbers, but the only important thing is that when we see the intercorrelation between text measures, and these are not all, years of exposure will get you so far, but it will not get you that online difference. However, study abroad did. So it seems like it's not only the amount of years that you have, and here, age of exposure did not matter. Now, this all were learners who learned Spanish after their L1 was set. The average age was about 15 years old. So that's different. So what does it mean for SLA? Well, we have these hypotheses from generative linguistics and SLA, like I mentioned. So it appears that our, that our intermediate learners are shallow processors, right? They do not seem to be using that information in the beginning, and this is a purely syntactic reflex. There's no difference between these two sentences in terms of meaning. But our advanced learners show behavior that mirrors the online behavior. So what does it mean? It means that, at least for us, yes, the intermediate might be shallow parsers, but that's not the explanation. That's not why. Why? Because they're not having enough knowledge of the cue structure of the L2. Now, with these type of results, you can't say they can't get there. They could get there with more exposure and more knowledge. And obviously, just exposure is not enough. We saw that here. The type of exposure really does matter. But our advanced learners show promise. They show behavior that's just like native speakers. So our conclusions, again, are that our data show a very clear pattern of development. Our learners progressively get better at recognizing this violation with mode exposure. Getting more proficient in L2 then means that you're progressively more you develop more sensitivity to these types of expectation violations. The quality of the exposure seems to matter, at least in our data. And our main conclusion is we believe that both L1 and L2 processing appear to be at least partially contingent on the ability of generating this predictions that can be assessed during online comprehension. And a bunch of people helped with this project, so I have to put their names up there, and thank you.
Okay. We have time for a couple of questions.
Okay, if I got the right, one sentence is correct and the other sentence is incorrect, right?
No, they're both grammatical.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
In Spanish, you can have optionally ditransitive sentences, so it's the difference between telling something to someone or just saying
something.
Well,
not in my Spanish, but that's okay.
Oh, well, I was going to say, these materials were developed actually by a Spaniard in Spain, and she corroborated this with native speakers. So basically what they said is that this is grammatical but not preferred. So it's the difference between le dije que sí, versus yo dije que sí. Sorry.
The question, I have two questions.
Yes.
Maybe I should only ask one. What is it that you are measuring? In one condition, you measured on the verb, right? And
yes.
In one condition, one word was missing.
Right.
And in the other, the word was present.
Right.
So you are actually not measuring something about the clitics as such, but about the presence of a word versus the absence of a word.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be possible, and that's not absolutely 100% clear, that this has something to do with the clitic as such. What you are actually measuring is presence versus absence of a word before the verb, mm-hmm. right? Wouldn't it be possible to add another word instead of the clitic in that position so that it has it could have nothing to do with, let's say, prosody, with prosodic patterns that you predict. For example, like an adverb or something like that, that would kind of neutralize that. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I totally understand. Now, the prosodic patterns here, I mean, because it was a self-paced reading, there was no prosody
there
involved.
Is silent prosody, according to Janet Fodor and mm-hmm. some others. So when we read, you know,
right.
We also do prosody.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could definitely try to put another word there. And there were lots of words before. And the interesting part here is that these two sentences were identical otherwise. So, you know, it's a very selective reaction that they have only when they didn't get the clitic. Now, offline, and I know, you know, I didn't show the sentence for the Spanish speakers, but we can talk later. When you have either le dijo o dijo, you know, we prefer to say the sentence with the clitic. But we would have to think of a word that has the same length. And the only word that can have the same length, really, is a neutral clitic. And to tell you the truth, Leticia Palabos tried this in her dissertation, and there was no difference between those two conditions. She tried a different clitic there, and then another one there, so she had three levels of embedding, and she found no differences there. So that didn't seem to matter, at least in her results. Now, I didn't want to subject our L2 learners to three embedded clauses, because we were already testing them for 3 hours. So that's why we simplified that center embedding.
Just a quick data question. You didn't say, do you get the group by presence absence of the clitic interaction? So,
I don't remember. I mean, I presented the group results, but we are really interested in looking at the development because whatever you
divide
by. You
have the correlational thing as well, but I was wondering. It looked like it was just a main effect. That's why I was wondering.
Yep. I could bid them and run Nova's shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.